Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my KFI podcast. Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by DSL Extreme at dslextreme.com. The show you're about to hear originally aired on Saturday, August 12, 2006, on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles. This is show 273.
August 12, 2006.
KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 11:06, I'm Deborah Mark, KFI News.
Thank you, Deborah. Good morning, everyone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI. That's my phone number, 1-800-520-1534. If you want to talk about technology, and that's anything to do with technology, not just computers, but the internet, MP3 players or cell phones, camcorders, home theater, all of that stuff. That's what we talk about. And how it's changing our world, our work, our play. It's clearly changing entertainment, man. People watch YouTube now more than they watch TV almost. YouTube says 100 million videos a day are being watched on that website. And now, as I mentioned to Bill, the cell phone companies really want you to start watching video on your cell phone. I saw one analyst who predicted that more video would be watched on cell phones and televisions in about 10 years. That's a long way off. Hard to predict that kind of thing. But the phone companies are doing their best to make sure you can. It's big in Japan because they spend a lot of time in commuter trains and, you know, we drive, we commute in a car. You're not going to watch your cell phone in a car. If you had more time, maybe standing around, it would make sense. I'm not convinced. Certainly, you're not going to do it at home. You've got a TV there. You're not going to do it at work. You know, where do they think people are going to be watching all these videos? You know, in New York City, sure, when you spend time on the subway, but not around here. You're not going to do it while you're driving. Maybe the kids in the back seat. Nevertheless, all the companies are moving very quickly. I mentioned that Verizon and Singular are using this UMTS technology. This will be replacing their EVDO technology. And Sprint and Nextel announced a $3 billion plan. They may be the ones that jump ahead on this one. Sprint's always had a very good service. They use PCS. And they've always had fairly fast data service. They announced that they're going to build a next-generation high-speed wireless network. They're going to spend $3 billion doing it nationwide. In fact, they're kind of in a unique position to do this nationwide because they own wireless spectrum in 83 of the top 100 U.S. markets. So they can actually do this thanks to Nextel. This is over and above, I guess, the cell networks. Because of Nextel's walkie-talkie capability. That was a good acquisition. And it looks like they'll be using WiMAX, which is essentially Wi-Fi. It's the kind of, what is it, 802.11.13? I can't remember the number. It's hard to keep track of all these numbers. But WiMAX is a very long range and very high speed wireless. So this will piggyback, you know, on top of their cell phone. This isn't for the phone. This is for wireless internet access. Means you can use it on the cell phone, but I believe the technology they're implementing, they could also become one of the biggest internet service providers in the country because you could, and this is starting to happen now anyway with the cell phone companies, you put a card into your computer and get their WiMAX that way. You're already seeing laptops sold with what they call, WWAN capability, wireless WAN capability, either using Verizon's EVDO or Singular's. And it is pretty fast, you know, right now, even as it is. This is we're currently in what they call a third generation network, where it's fairly fast, not as fast as your broadband at home, but a few hundred kilobits a second, enough to show video, maybe a little chop, a little stutter, if you've looked at the VCast that Verizon offers, unless you've got a very good signal, or it's not a very busy day, it stutters a little bit. Well, this fourth generation network that Sprint's going to put in, I don't think you're going to have that problem. We're talking a megabit. 1 million bits a second. 1,000 kilobits a second. Or is it? Is that right? Yeah. And it will be pretty much nationwide. 83 of the top 100 markets. They're the third largest carrier in the United States. They say $2 to $3 billion. They'll get this in by 2008. It's going to take a couple of years. But this will be 4G, fourth generation. There are two technologies they could have chosen from. WiMAX is an Intel technology. Qualcomm, who does the EVDO technology, had a successor to EVDO, but Sprint decided to use the WiMAX. So here's what could happen. Here's the vision, and this is just a couple of years out. First of all, of course, remember, this is not a cell phone technology. It's on your cell phone, but it's not for cell phone calls. It's for data. But because of voice over internet, you could use it for calls. So, and it will be fast enough to use for calls. It's potentially symmetric, although I think it probably won't be when they implement it, which means high speed up as well as down. But let's say they give you 256 or more kilobits up. That's enough to make phone calls, high quality phone calls, without the cellular network. Now, Sprint's doing it, so they still make money. They don't mind. You're making VoIP calls. So you're going to have internet calls. They could be a major internet service provider. You know, it's sad in a way because WiMAX was originally developed to put internet access into areas where the wires weren't there. You know, the rural areas where they didn't have high-speed internet access. And where is it going to be implemented? Of course, the biggest markets, because that's where the most money is. So you'll have high-speed internet on your phone or on your laptop. Or even on your computer if you buy the right card. You'll be able to make voice over internet calls in addition, presumably cheaper voice over internet calls in addition to your cell phone calls. It'll also wire a bunch of other possible other gadgets. You've got this WiMAX floating through the air. We suddenly have high-speed internet available everywhere. Your PDA, your MP3 player. Apple was rumored to announce an MP3 player that had Wi-Fi, and that may happen. It may be an iPod with Wi-Fi. They didn't announce it this week. I'll talk a little bit about what they did announce later, but they did announce a new computer, but they didn't announce a new iPod. But maybe, you know, we'll probably hear about new iPods September, October, in time for the holiday buying season. That's typically when they do it. It could be one that has Wi-Fi built in or WiMAX built in. It's essentially getting us very close to that era we've all been hoping for, where high-speed internet access is available everywhere you go. And you'll have a variety of devices you can use it with. Not just your phone, but your laptop, a handheld device, maybe a computer, maybe the Microsoft UMPC, maybe an iPod. Sprint says they hope to make this available to 100 million people by the end of 2008. Which would actually leapfrog us ahead of areas that have traditionally been farther ahead of us in this high-speed networks, like Europe and Japan and Korea. So I applaud them. I mean, this is a big investment. It could make a very big difference in terms of how we use the internet. I've been talking for 5 or 6 years now. In fact, I remember giving speeches in the late 90s saying the most important technology was wireless, and the most important implementation would be ubiquitous wireless, not just in the home, not Wi-Fi in the home or a internet cafe, but everywhere you go, high-speed internet. And I think we're getting there. It's kind of exciting, kind of interesting. Now that Sprint's done this, I imagine we'll see faster movement from both Singular and Verizon towards this UMTS and other high-speed networks. Maybe they'll do WiMAX too. WiMAX is exciting. WiMAX has been around for a couple of years. People have been talking about it. I think it's pretty exciting. Intel, Motorola, and Samsung are the three big companies involved. The loser in that was a technology from Qualcomm. Although Qualcomm may well get the Verizon Singular deal. Who knows? Actually, they wouldn't get Singular. I think they'd get Verizon. I think there's GSM, and Qualcomm usually does CDMA-based stuff. Anyway, it's exciting news. Other news, as I said, Apple, a new computer. We'll talk about it a little later on, the Mac Pro. The interesting thing from the point of view of somebody looking at this is not only is it a very, 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 very fast computer based on the Woodcrest chips, which are high-end versions of the Core 2 we've been talking about, but more importantly, their price is so competitive, in fact, lower than Dell's for a comparably equipped computer, that a lot of people who might have been looking at a Dell ProLiant server or similar equipment from other companies might well go Apple when you can get a Mac for less, put Windows on it, runs great. You get the great engineering. Apple, very aggressive in its pricing of this new computer. So we'll talk about that. And anything else you want to talk about, 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. 1-800-520-1534. Are you excited about the idea of high-speed internet everywhere you go? I think that could transform everything. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
The KFI News team works weekends. KFI News,
24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. If you've got travel plans, you're going to want to go to the KFI Travel Guide at KFIAM640.com. Answer all your questions about delays, carry-on items, security concerns. It's all in the KFI Travel Guide, KFIAM640.com. I'm going to be going there because I'm flying to Seattle on Thursday, going on a cruise on Saturday, going to Canada the following week. I need my hair gel. Somebody pointed out in the chat room that, of course, in the States, if you're flying around, the only thing is liquids. And I understand that because the plot was to sneak innocuous liquids on board. But, of course, they weren't innocuous. They were highly explosive, things like nitroglycerin. And the thinking was they were going to set them off with the electronics from a camera flash. Okay, I understand all that. Somebody asked in the chat room, well, why, when you fly from Britain, are they banning everything? If you're flying from Britain to the States, and of course that's where the attack was going to occur on a flight, 11 flights from Britain to the U.S. If you're flying on those flights, why can't you bring, they said, the only thing you can bring on board is your boarding pass. And of course, things like prescription medicines that you need on the plane. But no laptop, not even a paperback book, not an iPod. And they were saying, why not an iPod? There's not a transmitter in an iPod. What you could do? Well, there's a battery in the iPod, right? So there's electricity in it. So you could use it to ignite a bomb. So anything electronic is out. I'm not sure why they're banning paperback books, except that they're hard to search. I guess you could put something in there. But what a horrible idea of an 8 or 12 hour flight with nothing to read, nothing to do, but look at the airplane movie and eat the airplane food. It just sounds awful. Just sounds horrible. But that's why. For the person in the chat room, I was wondering about that. I mean, anything electronic could be used. And I'm not going to debate the merits of this or not. I think it's a reasonable precaution, and I think that's something they need to do, and I understand why. And there are a number of security experts who are saying this is ridiculous. It's not going to think of all the other ways they could do this, of course. But you got to do something. You can't just say, okay, go ahead. It's a little bit scary. So anyway, find out before you fly by going to KFIAM640.com, and I know I will be doing that for sure. Jim in Palmdale, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jim.
I got a quick question. It's a laptop issue. I have a compact Presario 700, and I have two issues, configuration issues with RJ45 and dial-up, and a memory issue. I contacted HP to do an upgrade. It's got 256 megabytes of RAM, one to go to 512 or 1 gig.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And they said that the maximum capable is 384.
Oh, boy. It's really old. That's why.
and it's really old. So, of course, they're saying it's time for a laptop. It was suggested to me to go purchase a 1 or 2 gigabyte flash drive with USB, plug it in, and it would be an artificial expansion of my memory.
No, it's not the same. Whoever suggested that doesn't understand what they're talking about. So don't listen to that person anymore.
Okay.
All right. There's hard drives and there's RAM. It would be an extension of your hard drive to put a flash drive on there, not of your RAM.
Okay.
You cannot expand the RAM beyond 384. That computer's too old, really, to use with any modern operating system. Windows 98 would be the most recent operating system to be safe to use or usable, and it's not safe to use it because they're stopped updating Windows 98. There's no more security updates. Mm-hmm. It's a real problem. A lot of people have older computers. I was just at a friend's house. He's got 4 or 5 older computers. There isn't much to do. You're going to have to keep running Windows 98. The best thing to do would be take that computer off the internet because it's vulnerable and there is no fix. And Microsoft's going to, as they've said already, we're not fixing it anymore. And there is at least one major vulnerability in Windows 98 that means somebody can take over your system. You could put a firewall on it, an antivirus, and anti-spyware, and pray. But if you're taking a Windows 98 system on the internet, you're taking a chance. My recommendation, anybody has an older computer like that, run Linux. It's safe, it's robust, it's reliable. It'll run an older computer in smaller memory. Ubuntu is a good choice, but there are many choices out there. They're absolutely free. It is, you know, you're not going to be able to play games. Well, you play the Linux games. You're not going to be able to do maybe some of the programs you wanted to do. But Linux has a broad variety of software. It's safe to surf. You can do email and surfing. If you have an older computer, put Linux on it. That's your only choice at this point. I'll talk more about that in a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640 more. Stimulating talk radio. It's 11:29. Deborah Marks in the KFI News Center.
Just because it's the weekend doesn't mean you got to get stupid.
More stimulating weekends.
KFI. AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Keep those phones ringing today. 1-800-520-1KFI. Not only now through 2 o'clock, but I'm going to keep answering calls from 2 till 4 this afternoon. So if you've got a burning question about technology, your computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, I shall be here till 4 this afternoon. 1-800-520-1534. We will talk. I'm going to talk, I think, tomorrow more about the Apple announcements. I want to have some time to do that. About the Mac Pro and Leopard, the new operating system, and an interesting battle that's kind of shaping up over Leopard. You know, Paul Theriot, who I really respect, I think he's wonderful, talks about Windows at WinSuperSite. Paul was very dismissive of the Apple Leopard announcements. He said, Apple should admit they've always complained about Microsoft stealing from them, but look how they've stolen from Microsoft with Leopard. And so I'm going to talk about that, and then I'm going to give you a response from an Apple blogger. It's a blog called Roughly Drafted, to Paul's comments. And I'll let you be the judge. We'll talk. We'll do that tomorrow. A little debate over who's stealing from whom. You know, and I guess the point I would make is, yeah, they're stealing from each other. And that's great for us. Cross-pollinization is great for everybody. I disagree a little bit with Paul, but we'll talk about it tomorrow. 1-800-520-1KFI. That is my phone number. And Rob is on the line from... Before I get to Rob, I was going to mention Linux a little bit more because we had talked with Jim. He has an older computer, can't add memory, only goes to 384. What can you use it with? You know, Windows, I don't recommend anymore. Because you can't run any new version of Windows, XP or Vista, when it comes out on that old machine. It's too old. And Microsoft has stopped supporting older versions. So you can't run those safely. We already know of major holes in Windows 98. And Microsoft said, you know, we're not going to fix it. Sorry. Which is terrible because there are probably 20 or 30 million Windows 98 machines still online in dusty, unused corners of schools and universities and homes. And many of these are just not maintained at all. They're wide open to exploitation. It just means hackers will find them, turn them into zombies used to spread email and attack other computers on the internet. And there's nothing these owners can do about it. And Microsoft apparently doesn't care. Yeah, they're out of date. Those people really should buy new computers. That's their response. That's what HP told Jim when he called him. Yeah, you should just buy a new computer. Well, come on, that's unrealistic. These things still run. They're reliable. They're fine. It's just because Microsoft, in its infinite wisdom, or maybe its greed, decides not to buy, not to support it. You got to buy the new operating system. Sorry. What if you bought a lawnmower and 3 years or 4 years later, the company said, you need a new lawnmower. We're not going to sharpen those blades anymore. Sorry, it's too old to sharpen those blades. What if you bought a TV set and 5 or 6 years down the line, the networks all changed how they broadcast and you had to get a new TV set because the old one didn't work anymore? That's kind of what this is. It's greed, pure and simple. We're not going to support it. We want you to buy the new stuff. Well, there's good news, and this is what I was telling Jim, is there is a free operating system that will run on that hardware, will run well, is completely supported. It will be supported forever because it's open source. Patches come out all the time for it. It's called Linux, L-I-N-U-X. It's free. You could download it if you go to, there are many places to go. SUSE, S-U-S-E, is a very good one. I like a lot. Mandriva is another one, but my favorite right now, in fact, really everybody, it's just, we'll cut through the confusion because there's so many different flavors of Linux. Ubuntu, U-B-U-N-T-U, U-B-U-N-T-U.com. It's absolutely free. In fact, they'll ship you a disk if you want. You just give them your address for free. They'll send you the disk. It works on a huge variety of software, including older computers, and it's supported. It's fixed. There are patches for it. It's secure. It's more secure than Windows to begin with. And they're keeping it secure. And it runs great on old, slow hardware. So it really is a good solution. Now, if what you're using the computer for is something that requires Windows, then you've got to buy a new Windows computer. Sorry. Can't help you there. I mean, there are ways to run Windows programs and so forth on Linux. Takes a little more skill and a little more effort. But truthfully, if what you need is Windows, you probably should buy a new copy of Windows. Microsoft's got you over a barrel. But if what you're doing is email, word processing, spreadsheets, surfing, playing Tetris or Solitaire or Sokoban or, any kind of, game like that, and there are lots of great games on Linux, including some very high-end games, then Linux is a great choice. Robust, solid. It's much safer than putting Windows 98 on that machine and trying to keep it alive. That's what you should be doing. All right, now, enough of that. Now, Rob and Del Mar, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Leo. Hey, I have a Pentium 4 computer, Sony computer, and I'm trying to skinny down the amount of security software that I have on it. I know you're...
because it could just bog you down, huh?
Oh, it sure does.
If you go out and buy McAfee Security Suite or Norton Security Suite, it's like 30 programs, and they're all running at once, and the computer starts working really slow.
Yeah, it's slowing down, and they're stepping on each other.
Right.
I have Norton. I also have Adware and SpyBot on there.
Good.
And I purchased SpySweeper recently, and it seems like I understand that you really support Nod32 as being much better than Norton. And I looked at the internet, and what I'm wondering is if I go to Nod32... is there anything else I can take off here so I can skinny it down and speed it up?
The truth about these anti-spyware programs is they're of limited use nowadays because the best way to avoid spyware is to change your behavior and not do the things that give you spyware in the first place. Downloading music from illegal sites, going to funny sites and installing the software on the sites. All of these things are dangerous. Get a good hardware firewall, a router. Most people have them now if you have high-speed internet.
I have one.
That's all you need. So you can turn, that part of the Norton security suite is unnecessary.
Okay.
I just get rid of all of Norton. Nod32 will replace the functionality of Norton as far as an antivirus. And by the way, we've done extensive testing on all of these. Norton will slow you down. McAfee 2, about 10%. Not 32, and this is an anomaly. I'm not sure why this happened, but actually the computer not only was not slowed down, it was slightly faster, and I'm not sure why that is. Oh. I'm going to take that as an anomaly and just say it doesn't make a big difference. Okay. As far as anti-spyware, my recommendation nowadays is Windows Defender. If you have a copy of Windows that will pass the Windows Genuine Advantage test, in other words, a legitimate licensed copy of Windows, Defender from Microsoft is very good. And really, the only part you really care about, the scanning is of dubious value. The spyware removal capabilities are absolutely useless. But the real-time protection is what you care about. And what it does is it modifies the operating system so that you're less vulnerable.
Okay. So it's in a beta form right now.
Yeah, they call it beta. It's been beta for a year.
Oh.
I think that's so that if they decided to charge for it, they could explain why.
All right.
Oh, we released it, so we've got to charge you. It is part right now of what I'm watching carefully because it may end up being the best solution. Microsoft's OneCare, which is Microsoft's anti-spyware, antivirus, and kind of overall security solution. It's $39 for three computers, so it's priced right. The antivirus is still a little subpar, but it's getting better. So that's one to watch. That's like a dark horse coming up. And the advantage of that is if Microsoft does it, right, they're going to integrate it best into the operating system. But you got to watch because if they start bloating it out with all sorts of extra features, it's not going to be a good choice. Right now, the lightest weight way to go is Microsoft Defender for anti-spyware, Nod 32 for an antivirus, and a hardware router. The other thing I strongly encourage is use Firefox instead of Internet Explorer.
Is Netscape? I'm using Netscape.
Netscape's fine.
Okay.
The problem with Internet Explorer is just that it supports active scripting and ActiveX, which are potentially dangerous technologies. But if you don't add that capability to Netscape or Firefox, you're fine.
Okay. Now, should I leave Adware, the SpyBot, and the SpySweeper on there?
You could take them off if you feel like. Here's what I would do. What really slows you down is stuff that's running in the background, right? So just don't have the background stuff. Now, Adware and SpyBot don't do anything in the background. SpySweeper does. So turn off the background scanning.
Okay.
Use Defender for that because I think it's the least intrusive of all of these. And it's because it's Windows, it just kind of hooks into existing Windows stuff. But do use them for scanning because it's good to get additional opinions. The problem with spyware is once you get it, you're dead. Because it changes so rapidly, none of these programs can effectively disinfect. It hooks so deeply into the system that it's, you know, if you get it, the only reasonable response to spyware and viruses these days, if you get them, is to rebuild the system.
That's great.
Unfortunately, that's why you don't want to get it. You're welcome. Yeah. So, you know, just, and I think a lot of this is behavior. When I talk to people who don't, you know, who are safe, it's behavioral as much as running the programs. No, we got to get out of this mindset that the programs can somehow save us. They can't. Only you can save yourself. And it's not going to bad sites, not downloading music. I'll tell you, using these music sharing programs right now is the number one reason people get this stuff on their system. Don't open email attachments. Don't click links in emails. If you have a link in an email you want to go to, type the link into your browser. Use Firefox, Opera, Netscape, pretty much, you know, anything but Internet Explorer. Now, that people sometimes use things like the Avant browser, which is based on Internet Explorer. That does not make you safer. You need to use a browser that is not based on Internet Explorer. These things will make a difference. You don't need to bog your system down with a lot of protective tools. They just slow you down. Change your behavior, change how you get on the Internet. And really, one of the best things you can do, and unfortunately it's one of the trickiest, is not to run as administrator. Windows is set up to run as administrator, unfortunately, and most programs really don't work very well. Some games will not run unless you're administrator, which is ridiculous. It's unsafe to use any operating system as administrator because when a bad guy gets on your system, he gets your privileges. So if you're running as administrator and spyware gets in your system, spyware has administrator access. That's bad. If you're running as a limited user and spyware gets on your system, it's a limited user as well, which means in most cases, not all, it can't install software, it can't install itself, it can't make changes to your system. That's what you want. Windows doesn't encourage running as a limited user, but it is the safest way. If you're not using Windows, if you're using OS X or Linux, absolutely never, never run as an administrator. There's no reason to. You can easily use the systems without doing that. That's the biggest change. If Microsoft wanted to make a big change and make Vista safer, that's what they'd do. They're doing kind of that. Not exactly that. And the reason is they don't want to break existing software. That's really why Windows is insecure. Because it has to be compatible with all the millions of programs that have been coming out over the last 10 years. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1150.
Hot, fresh, John and Ken. Now open weekends.
John and Ken, Saturdays starting at 3.
Show notes are online at KFIAM640.com. KFIAM640.com is also the place to go for the KFI travel information if you're headed out for your holiday. Perfect time, huh? Perfect time to get on a plane. Jeez. You know, there's all sorts of things you can't carry. You want to know how flight delays are, how the security lines are, what things you can and cannot carry. KFIAM640.com. Show notes are at KFI640.com, AM640.com. You click my, so let's go to the show's menu and click my name, Leo Laporte. Or if you're listening live, you'll see my picture. And you can just click that. That goes to my page on KFIAM640.com. And then there's a link on the right called Official Website. That'll take you to leo.am. On leo.am, we try to put all the things about that we're talking about on there. I'm going to turn on the comment box. Forgot to do that today. So you can make comments if you have suggestions, something you'd like to add. There's a comment box at the bottom, or will be as soon as I press the button here. And there's lots of other stuff, including links to our chat room and previous recordings of previous shows. All the previous shows are up there, almost all of them. I missed a couple. Even how to subscribe to a podcast. So if you miss a show live, you can hear it via podcast. It's all there. It's leo.am. That's the short form. News is next on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. We'll be back and talk more high tech at 1-800-520-1KFI. Right now at 11:59, it's Jessica Rosenthal in the KFI News Center.
August 12th, 2006.
It's 77 in Santa Ana, 79 in Huntington Beach, 76 in Glendale, and 73 in Santa Monica. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 12:07, I'm Jessica Rosenthal, KFI News.
Thank you, J-Row. Hello, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is the number. The phones are open, the lines are lit, and we're going to take more calls from now till 2 and the Dr. Dina Dell Show, but then I will keep taking calls off the air till 4 this afternoon. It's one of those special days where Leo gets to work late. I love doing it. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. 1-800-520-1534. I want to get another call on here. Let me look and see who's been very patient. Who's the patientest of them all? It's Joe in Illinois. Hello, Joe. Welcome to KFI.
Hello, Leo.
Hey.
Hey, I got a question about the Mac Pro.
Okay.
Yes, I was going to ask if there's any way to put like a 5.1 surround sound speaker system.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It has optical out, and it has USB out, and there are many choices that you could put a 5.1 system on that. No problem at all. Okay. That's true of all computers nowadays. That's just kind of a freebie that comes along with modern sound cards as they support 5.1 sound. I haven't checked, but I'm sure it does. It would be crazy not to.
Yeah, I was wondering if they had any add-in cards like the Creative.
I don't think you need one, but I'll have to look at the specs on it. I have the reviewer's guide. The thing is, nowadays, almost everybody uses just the built-in chipsets on the motherboards for five, and they come with 5.1 sound. It's just something they come with, and I'm sure they're using an Intel motherboard. I know they're using an Intel chipset on this, so I would be surprised if not. I'm going to talk more about the Mac Pro next tomorrow, but it really is a significant machine in terms of power. In fact, they can't even call it a desktop computer. Intel says if you're going to put these Xeon chips, these Woodcrest chips in a computer, you have to either call it a server or a workstation. They're really not designed for desktop computers. That's Intel sees that as being the core too, the Conroe and the Merrim. Woodcrest is a Xeon. It's an amazing machine. 4 megabytes of L2 cache. That makes a big difference. It's shared, so if one processor is not working so hard, the other one can take over all the cache. In so many ways, this is a spectacular machine, very fast machine.
Well,
Well, it'll run, by the way, it'll run Windows really well. That's the other thing. I mean, it's a good Windows machine. And with either Boot Camp, which allows you to boot Windows on it, or Parallels, you're going to be able to run Boot Camp on it. In fact, I'm kind of excited because VMware, which is kind of one of the best and original virtualization companies, has announced they're doing one VMware for OS X, which they've never done before. So Parallels is great.
I've been using VMware for years. Well, the thing I'm a PC programmer that's migrating to the Mac and starting to create
perfect.
More Mac applications.
See, isn't that a perfect solution? I mean, you've got everything you need. It comes with, by the way, Xcode, which is great, and Xcode 3, which is going to be out soon, will be fantastic. I'm just looking at the press.
I'm waiting for it.
Yeah, I'm going to look at the press kit here. And see, okay, page 16, music and audio, I'm sure. I mean, you know, this is aimed at high-end pro users. I can't imagine that it wouldn't support 5.1 surround. I mean, I'm only guessing, but I'm sure it will. These are all benchmark results. Music and audio, blah, 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 blah. It's got optical, digital, and analog stereo audio ports, new and legacy hardware. It doesn't say whether it supports 5.1, but I'd be shocked if it didn't. I'll find out for you. Okay. Are you going to buy one?
I'm thinking about it.
Here's the thing. I mean, it's cheap. 25. Yeah, it's cheap. If you compare this against a comparable, say, ProLiant from Dell, which is, there are only a few companies making these Xeon-based systems yet. It's the brand new chip.
It's like server, which I don't want.
Yeah, right. It's a ProLiant server. It's very expensive. I mean, we're talking $300 to $1,000 more. This is the first time I can remember. First time in recorded history that Apple has made a computer that costs less than a comparable Dell. So even if you were just buying it to run Windows, even if that's all you wanted to do, it'd be a better deal. That's really interesting. Apple's become very aggressive about this. Dave in San Diego, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Dave.
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
Good.
I've got a bunch of old photos and letters and slides and negatives from the family, large family, and I want to put them together so that we can have our family history represented there.
Great idea.
And I'm wondering about scanners and what would be a good choice to do that kind of thing.
You know, unless you want to spend a lot of money on a dedicated slide scanner. You said you have some slides?
Yeah, quite a few. My dad was in the service way back, and he's got bunches of them.
Yeah. I mean, those are, you can get an Nikon Cool Scan, but they're expensive. You're over $1,000, and all they do is slides. What I would recommend is the Epson Perfection series. They're not very expensive. $100, I think, you know, they're different levels, but depending on what you want to get. But the key on scanning slides, I've mentioned this before, is unlike scanning a page, if you're scanning a print, you bounce light off the print, and the scan head goes and across the bottom, right, and records that bounced off light. But that's not going to work with a slide or a negative, because you bounce light off a slide or a negative, what do you get? Nothing. You have to shine light through it. So the Epsons are among the few models that have light sources both underneath and above. They have light in the lid.
Okay.
So, and they come with a little five or six slide carrier that you put the slides in and you put it in there, and then you just scan them. So you can do five at a time.
Mm-hmm.
It does a very good job, very credible job. You want to clean the slides, of course, make sure they're pristine before you scan them, because you'll pick up any fuzz, dust, or lint. Does great with printed documents. I think these are really good. The Epson Perfection. I have a 1670, which is kind of a lower end, but there are higher ends. And unless you want to spend a lot of money for a dedicated slide scanner, which, by the way, will be a little faster, but not that much faster. I think this is probably the best way to go. You'll get a nice set of images.
Yeah, because then we can put it on CDs. And the family, it goes, there's hundreds. I mean, it seems like there's millions of people in this thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Don't throw out the slides, though. Keep those slides.
Yeah.
I know, you know, most people, I still have the old carousel, Kodak carousel, but, you know, how much longer is that going to be around? Nevertheless, the one thing we know is that prints and slides will always be viewable, but we don't know what's going to happen to those CDs or the hard drives, you know?
That's true.
In 100 years, is somebody going to be able to read the CDs? They're going to have to go to the museum to find a CD drive.
Yeah.
So, but you know that somebody will always be able to see the prints and slides. So I caution you against throwing out the originals. Keep them I know it's a pain to store them, but that may end up being...
We figured we'd do like an archive kind of thing.
That's
you know,
a good idea.
And really preserve them.
That's a good idea.
Get them so we don't quit handling. Every time everybody gets
right.
together, you know, we keep passing around looking at them, and then nobody can really figure anything out because there's no order to them, really.
I haven't dragged out the carousel in so long. We've got hundreds of slides. And this is a very important project, something we should all probably be doing because, they do degrade over time. So,
yeah.
It's good to get them, at least get a copy of them.
Cool. So that Epson Perfection, so the 1670, you think that might be?
That's the one I bought. I mean, there are higher level ones. In fact, I've mentioned this to other people, and they've ended up buying the higher level ones because they, I don't know if it makes that much difference. It might be higher resolution. I'm not sure exactly what the difference is, but you can get higher quality ones. A 3170 or, I mean, but it's the same idea. The Perfection series, the key is has that light in the lid, and that's what you really want. I think the higher end ones only just have higher resolution. And, you know, there's an issue about how high the resolution is because, of course, higher resolution means higher, bigger file size, right?
Larger.
Let me look and see. This is 1, 2. It looks they've got adapters for 35 millimeter film, 35 millimeter slides, and medium format. I don't know many people who have medium format, but if you did, that's really cool. That's
What's
really
medium
cool.
Format?
That's you know, if you use a Rolly or one of the large negative.
No, we don't.
Most people don't have those, but that's an example of how this is a kind of high end.
Yeah.
Pro thing. I love it. I would just buy by price. You know, the 3170, I don't know, it's a couple hundred bucks. I mean, they're not expensive.
That's not a bad.
Bad at all. And boy, you get a great result, I think.
Right on. Listen, I listen to you forever here, but this first time I called, but you always get good information and really put out the straight stuff. So.
Thank you.
Appreciate your help. Thanks.
I do my best.
You do.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'd sometimes get it wrong. While we were talking about the Mac Pro earlier in the week, we started a new podcast for Mac enthusiasts, an audio podcast called Mac Break Weekly. And I was saying, well, I don't understand why they released the Mac Pro with the old Core technology, not the Core 2, the newer technology. And I was corrected, and I was wrong. It's confusing. Intel calls the Core 2 technology that Conroe and Merrim based on. Internally, it's called the Core technology, not the Core 2, but the Core technology. The older Yona Core chips aren't the Core technology. The newer Core 2 chips are the Core technology. So Woodcrest, the 5100 chips, which the Mac Pro is based on, is Woodcrest is part of that Conroe Merrim Core 2 family. And I was wrong on that. So, but you see, when I make a mistake, I'll tell you. I try to get it right. Sometimes the technology moves so fast. The good news is... you guys are smart. If I make a mistake, I hear about it right away. So that's the good news. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 12:17.
John Ziegler, evenings right after John and Ken, 7 to 10.
KFI AM 640.
KFI 1224. KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 1-800-520-1KFI. 1-800-520-1534. Paul is in West LA. Hello, Paul. Welcome to KFI.
Hey Leo. Question on NTFS versus FAT32.
Yeah.
I noticed on a laptop that when I ran the image back and it was running either, it gave me the option of either Windows 2000 or Windows XP. It dumped it in a FAT32 format and I converted it over to NTFS.
That's weird. Was it originally FAT32?
You know, I don't know.
I think it must have been because I think that's most imaging programs will copy the file system.
Well, what I did though,
I mean, they're not going to change if it's an NTFS file system. It would actually be far too complicated for an imaging program to change it to FAT32 on copying it. So it must have been FAT32.
FAT32.
Yeah.
But I converted it over to NTFS, and it seemed like it was running slower.
Mm-mm.
And I guess my question is, you know, some of these imaging programs that you can use, like Ghost or something like that, would they write it in an NTFS, whatever on the existing drive, or do they?
They'll copy the format it's in.
Okay.
So they are making a copy of the file system in addition to all the data, And that's all they can do. They can't, they're not going to on the fly change the file system.
So when you're using something like, I mean, could it slow down if you're going, I know NTFS is much more secure.
I think NTFS could be slower, you bet. FAT32 is a dumb, simple file system. It doesn't do a lot of things like journaling that the NTFS does that make it more robust. You know, FAT32 has problems with fragmentation that the NTFS doesn't have. It's less reliable. It's, of course, limited in size, the size of the files. You can only create 2 gigabyte files. After that, that's it.
And so, what about backup hard drives that you put in? Again, when I had an 80 gigabyte USB, and that was in FAT32.
Yes.
Is that common?
Yeah, that's very common.
Okay.
FAT32 is the lingua franca. That's what every Windows version speaks FAT32.
Okay.
So if you're going to make a product and you don't want tech support calls from people using Windows 98, you make it FAT32.
So if I'm using this external backup for, you know,
I'd keep FAT32. Yeah, I think that's
FAT32.
Fine. I think for day-to-day operation, I like NTFS, but I don't think there's a, you know, it's more robust, but not so much so that, you know, you're going to notice it. I don't notice it's that much slower, although, you know, I haven't looked at benchmarks. It can certainly make sense that it would be slightly slower.
And I just want to pass this along. I had one of those external drives that went bad. It was a Western Digital all-in-one. So you hear the click, click, click.
Yeah.
But I decided to take it apart and take the hard drive and put it in another USB enclosure, and it worked.
Oh, interesting.
So thought I'd just pass along that option.
Yeah, I wonder what that was all about.
If the circuitry was failing on
bad,
the other.
Bad enclosure, which I would not have tested. So you were smart,
right.
You were smart to
but
do
you
that.
Void the warranty and stuff.
Yeah, but it wasn't working.
Right. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let me just kind of explain what he's talking about, because we just bandied all these terms around, and maybe you didn't. I think a lot of people go, what are they talking about? We're talking about the way data is stored on the hard drive. They call it the file system. The original Windows DOS file system was called FAT, which stands for File Allocation Table 16. It was a 16-bit file allocation table. Starting with Windows 98 and later, FAT32 was the common format. And all versions of Windows from 98 on can read FAT32. But when we came to NT and Windows 2000 and finally XP, the preferred file system was the NT file system, or NTFS. And it has some considerable advantages. It's a more modern file system. It's less prone to fragmentation. It's journaled, so if the system crashes, it's much less likely to damage data. It can make larger files and so forth. It's a better file system. There may be more overhead associated with it. I don't know. I'm going to have to do some research on that. I think in general, if you're using XP and you don't need compatibility with Windows 98, NTFS is probably the best choice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 12:29. Jessica Rosenthal is in the KFI News Center.
Nighttime is the right time for John Ziegler. Monday night, 7 to 10. KFI AM 640.
12:37, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Keep the phones ringing. I'll be here till 4 this afternoon answering your calls at 1-800-520-1-KFI. Let's see here. Ben's on the line all the way from Iowa. Hello, Ben. Welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
I'm attempting to build my own home surveillance system, just as kind of a fun home project.
Mm-hmm.
But due to the price of most network cameras, I decided to just do it with some webcams I had laying around.
Sure.
The cameras work fine, but I'm having trouble connecting them all to the same Windows 2000 system.
Yeah, that's going to be a little tricky. There were only a couple of cameras that allowed that. It's really a driver issue.
Okay.
Because if you think about it, you've got a normal webcam and a normal driver. As soon as the driver sees the webcam, that's it. It's hooked up.
Mm-hmm.
You can't add another webcam. The driver's not going to say, oh, you've got two, and act appropriately. There was a way to do it. What kind of netcam do you have?
Well, I have two Philips, two I picked up at Walmart, and another Logitech QuickCam Express, the older model.
Yeah, no, I don't know of any multicam drivers for those. That's what you need to find. It's not the camera. You need to find a driver that will support multi-cameras. There was a driver for the old 3Com Home Connect that, which was actually a very good camera, especially for this kind of thing, because it was good in low light.
Oh, okay.
So if you could find them somewhere, you know.
Well, I found. Oh, sorry. I found the software is recognizing all three, but it only lets me input from one capture source.
Right.
So I need to find one that'll let me do multiple with that.
Yeah, exactly. It's a driver issue. So okay. Vista Imaging, which made the 3Com Home Connect, actually made a special driver for it that would allow you to have multiple three, you know, because USB says you can hook up 127 cameras if you want.
Yeah.
But that doesn't do you any good unless you have a driver that says, I see 127. So that's all it. Right. I mean, there's just nothing, there's no way around that I know of. I mean, you could use virtualization and run multiple virtual copies of Windows. I mean, there's, you know, but basically you need multiple computers to do that or okay. a driver that's capable of seeing multiple cameras.
All right. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Glendale. Marie is on the line. Marie, welcome to KFI. Hi.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My sound system that's hooked up to the television and the DVD player and everything, when the volume gets a little bit loud on the receiver, it turns itself off, the sound off, and it flashes protector.
It turns it up or off?
Turns it off.
Yeah, it's protecting your speakers.
Right, but see, that's what gets me, because the volume isn't really that loud. You know, it's not like teenagers are playing or anything.
And you're not a little deep, right?
No.
Okay. It sounds like that it's malfunctioning, but that's what it's essentially. It's like a fuse. If you think of it as a fuse, it's just to protect your speakers, because you turn it too loud, your speakers can get blown out.
Right. Well, now, you know, my son had a theory, because he's the one who connected it. He said that when he bought the connections to connect it to the speakers, you know, for the surround sound, they sold him little gold tips to put on the end of the wire.
It could be that.
The speaker.
If you think about, how does this stereo know what the speakers are capable of, right?
Yeah.
And the issue is something called impedance. Every speaker, every headphone, every device that outputs sound has an impedance. It means how much power it takes to drive that speaker. Now, some speakers have a lower impedance, so it takes less juice coming down the wire for that speaker to be loud. So what I suspect is, and you might want to look in the manual for your stereo, mm-hmm. did it come with its own speakers?
Yes.
And you're still using the speakers it came with, yes?
No.
I've changed
the speakers a couple of times because I want it to go small.
That's the issue. You have higher impedance speakers, which means that your stereo still thinks you have the old speakers. And at that level that you had it turned up, the old speakers would blow.
Oh.
But you've put new speakers on there that require more juice to make the same amount of sound. Does that make sense? So because you're turning it up, those speakers don't sound loud. The old speakers would have sounded louder, I would guess.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if there is, and I doubt there is a way to change the programming of that receiver, but you might look in the manuals to see, to say, there may be a switch on the back that says, oh, you're using 8-ohm speakers. Oh, these are, if there is a switch that says what the impedance of the speakers are, you might want to change that. Because what's happening is you're using less sensitive speakers. It's about
okay.
Impedance is another way really of saying a sensitivity.
Okay,
so,
impedance.
Yeah, impedance. So another choice would be to find out what impedance that stereo was set up for and find speakers of the same impedance. It could also be, your son's theory could be correct because the wire could also impact it. If it were a high impedance wire with blocking signal, that could make it a lower level. But you want to match the speakers. It will be in the manual for that. The nice thing is nowadays, manuals for a lot of these consumer electronics devices are online. So if you've misplaced it, you can always often go online and find out what that's capable of. There may even be a way in the settings to change that or to turn that feature off, which might be the best solution.
And then it wouldn't do it. I mean,
yeah, because it's just trying to
blow it out.
No, I don't think so. If they don't sound loud to you, it's not going to blow them out.
I know they aren't really.
Yeah,
that
I
loud.
Would be. I'm willing to bet that it would be loud had you used the original speakers that came with the system.
Okay.
Because was it an all-in-one system? Is that...
Well, you know, it's I've had it quite a while. And like I said, I've changed. I'm pretty sure the speakers, the original speakers came with the receiver.
Yeah, I would. That would be my guess, because how else would it know what's too loud for those speakers, right?
Right.
So the best thing is, I would suggest that you can look around and find, I bet you there's a way to disable that feature in the receiver and say, look, don't be such a busybody. I like it that loud.
I know it. Sometimes you do need it louder.
It won't blow out the speakers unless, I mean, it has to be pretty loud to blow out the speakers.
Okay.
Yeah. It has to be. What happens is speakers are really just paper cones, or sometimes they're mylar or plastic. And if they get, if there's too much sound pushed through them, they'll pop, they'll break, they'll rip. And then you don't want them to sound like that.
No.
So it's just trying to protect you.
Okay.
All right.
I will tell my son to check it.
Check the impedance, son.
Huh?
Tell him to check the impedance, son.
Yes, I certainly will.
Your impedance is broken. Yeah, I've seen that on some stereo systems. I don't know if that's such a great idea, although I shouldn't say that because, in fact, I have blown speakers. I blew a very nice set of Advents once. By turning them up too loud. Jennifer, Los Angeles, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, I'm looking, my husband and I are looking to buy a laptop that's going to be great for gaming.
Ah, that's a little bit of a challenge. And the challenge
is
not so much the processor, but the video card.
The video card, okay.
There are good laptops for gaming because the video card manufacturers realize there are people like your husband. And they've started to make... So you need a special mobile chipset in the laptop. The laptops are too small to use the video cards you use on desktops. So they do make gaming notebooks. A good place to go look, although I'm not sure I'd buy there because they're very expensive, is Alienware. Dell just bought them. Alienware. And they make gaming notebooks. They make very... I mean... If your husband wanted state-of-the-art performance, they make high-end gaming notebooks.
Okay.
But that'll at least give you an idea of price and performance. They actually have SLI, which is the very fastest gaming, 17-inch screens. I mean, these things are very high-end. But what you could do is look at the video card that they use.
Oh, okay.
And say, oh, okay. So Alienware says that for good gaming performance... I need to use this particular card, and then look for a Dell. Dell makes them. A number of other companies make laptops that are aimed at gamers. I'm trying to think of what the best mobile chipset is.
As long as it runs well enough, I can use the laptop.
Well, what games does he play?
We play World of Warcraft together, actually.
You know, World of Warcraft is not that demanding.
Okay.
No, it's not as demanding as Unreal or Half-Life or, you know, the really fast first-person shooters. I played World of Warcraft on slower machines, and it's fine. But what you're probably going to look for is the GeForce Go card, which is going to give you the best performance. It's a mobile chipset. The ATIs come with a 7900GS. I'm not the ATIs. The Alienware's come with a 7900GS. But a GeForce Go, if it has a GeForce Go in it, it'll certainly be good enough for World of Warcraft.
Oh, okay.
So you play against each other? Are you like in the same room?
No, we can't play together right now, which is why we're going to get a laptop.
I get it. So
we're fighting over the computer for...
So the idea will be, though, that you will be sitting in the same room, but you will be in World of Warcraft.
Yes. Because they said that we'd be able to split off our characters, because we both have...
Oh, you have the same character?
...characters now.
You have 60s, both of you?
We both do now, yeah.
That's the highest you can go until this expansion pack comes out. Wow. And what's your character?
I have a hunter, and he has a warrior, but his is way better than mine. He's got epic things and all of that.
Where are your epic things? Haven't you got any good epic drops?
Not yet. I don't have anything epic yet. I have a lot of blue, but...
I thought if you played to level 60, you would get a bunch of epic. Maybe it's because you're a hunter.
I think I just haven't run all of the really big instances yet.
That's what you got to do. You got to go in some heavy dungeons.
Yeah, because I've just been doing a lot of battlegrounds since I hit 16.
Oh, yeah, that's why. That's how you got so high. I get it.
Yeah.
I get
it. I'm trying to get a crazy rank, you know.
Wow. And when when you play together, do you plan to like go into the same instances together?
We haven't been able to play together yet.
That's what you're thinking, right? You're not going to go off into different areas. You're going to hang together, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we'd actually be able to go play at the same time.
That is so weird.
Those are fun.
Will you?
Couple, huh?
No, I think it's.
And then I started to like it.
No, I think it's fascinating. I don't know because my wife totally is not into technology, so I have no idea what it would be like. But I have seen. I knew a couple that would sit down in a bar or whatever. They'd whip out their PDAs and they'd play games against each other. And so I don't think it's unusual, but I think World of Warcraft would be very interesting. If you were in the same room, I've never been in the same room that I've been playing with somebody, and because you could talk to each other. You could say, instead of typing at each other.
And then, we have a friend as well who's on, and then we have the Ventrilo
set up. So you talk that way.
Yeah, but it's like right now, it's like, I get to play with Matt, and then you get to play with Matt, but then we can all play at the same time.
You
eventually
need another computer, and he needs a laptop because he wants to be able to be mobile and so forth.
Yes, yeah. And then that way, you know, we can go on the road and he can still play.
If you go to Dell.com, they have laptops specifically for gaming. And if you get anything with a decent video card, World of Warcraft will be fine. But I think the Enforce or the GeForce Go is a very good choice.
GeForce Go.
Go means
is there
mobile.
Like a minimum on the video card as far as like a certain number of?
Well, you could look on what it said. What World of Warcraft says.
Oh, okay.
I have to say, I mean, I've played it on some pretty low and slow machines, and it actually, you know, what happens is you just don't get the screen resolution has to go down a little bit, but it's very playable.
Okay.
Of course, I'm not a level 60. I haven't been in that
hot horde, right?
I'm horde. How did you know that?
I've heard it. We listen all the time.
So you're good. You're a human. What is the other side? The Alliance? You're Alliance?
Alliance. We're Alliance. Yeah.
Well, if I see you, I will shoot you. You will be dead.
60, we will kill you.
You will, too. My undead, my level 18 undead priest will just...
Frodo.
Yeah, he'll be over. He'll just shrivel up in a ball and say, don't hurt me. I see level 60s go by and I bow to them.
Oh, that's good. I let them live when they do that.
Thank you. I envy you and your steeds.
I think it's nice when they bow. Bow or salute.
Anything you want, Jennifer, because you could just one fireball and I'd be dead. So, Jennifer, good luck. I think this sounds like a wonderful thing to do. I think the couple that games together stays together.
I think so. Thank you so much for all your help.
Take care, Jennifer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
If you have beliefs from the 3rd century, I don't have any patience for you.
John and Ken, today at 3.
But all religions have long historic roots. You think people should abandon the principles of their religion that were established?
Yes!
Centuries?
Absolutely! What, it insults intelligence?
John and Ken, Saturdays 3 to 5 on AM 640, online and on demand at KFIAM640.com.
You know who can't play World of Warcraft? People on dial-up can't. This is just, I mean, the world is changing so fast. If you are still on dial-up, you are missing out on all of the fun stuff you can do on the internet. That's not the internet you've got there. I don't know what it is, but it ain't the internet. High-speed internet's the only way to go, and now thanks to DSL Extreme, everybody can afford it because it really costs less than dial-up in many cases. $12.95 a month. And it's not some stripped-down internet. This is the same internet service provider I use, the same great service. And there's no hidden strings, no secret, you know, things you have to sign up for. There's no charge for the modem. The setup is free. There's no extra services required. It's guaranteed for a year, $12.95 a month. Call 866. This is toll free. 866, the number 2, GETNET, or visit them online at dslextreme.com. 866, the number 2, GetNet. Some restrictions apply, but this is the lowest price in the country for DSL. I guarantee it, $12.95 a month. 866, the number 2, GetNet, to get DSL Extreme.
Hate that behind-the-eight-ball Monday morning feeling? Stay in the loop all weekend long. more stimulating weekends.
KFI AM 640.
KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Have you played World of Warcraft? If you haven't, don't. A psychologist recently stated that it was her opinion, she's an expert in addictions, that 40% of all the World of Warcraft players are addicts in the sense that they can't stop, or they do it to the detriment of their home or work life, you know, loses their jobs or they don't eat. I don't think that number is awfully high, especially since that would mean millions of World of Warcraft addicts. I can't remember what the number is, but there's a very large number, 18 million people, something like that, who play World of Warcraft regularly. It's an environment you go into. There's some elements of gaming, but it's also social. In fact, some people call it the new golf among the cyber generation. It's the new thing that they do to get together, talk, and socialize, and maybe even get some business done. I don't know if that's true, but... And, of course, level 60, you have to work your way up. A level 60, somebody's played for many, many hundreds of hours to get there. And it gets you, because as you play, you get more power, you get more stuff, and it's addictive. I can understand. I had to stop playing. My life wasn't getting done. But it is a lot of fun. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Another hour of talk to come about this world, this wacky world of high tech. I'd love to hear from more World of Warcraft players about their addiction. Right now, though, at 12:59, Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center.
August 12th, 2006. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 106, I'm Jessica Rosenthal, KFI News.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number, and I will be taking calls from now till 2 in the Dr. Dean Adele Show, but then the calls continue, and I'll keep taking them till 4 this afternoon. So if you can't get through in the next hour, please keep calling. We'll get you on. I think everybody who calls will get on. 1-800-520-1KFI. We were talking about World of Warcraft in the last hour. I'd love to hear from World of Warcraft players. I just find it a fascinating subculture. And I think as these games get more and more realistic, I think more and more people are going to have problems with them, frankly. They are addictive. And I think you're going to see self-help groups I guess you can't really be a bum living on the street and be a World of Warcraft player. You need internet access, high speed. You need a computer, and you can't. And it's not free to play. You can't play it for free. You have to have. I think it's, what is it? It's $10 a month. There is a. I can't remember the cost. I stopped. I cut myself off because although you can play. There are free World of Warcraft servers. They're kind of illegal. Blizzard, the company that runs these commercial servers, has been very active in pursuing the people who are making the non-official, unofficial free servers. Because that's how they make their money, isn't it? Let's get back to the phones. Rick is in Moreno Valley. Rick, welcome to KFI. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Can dust build up inside your tower cause your computer speed to slow down?
That's an interesting question. It could slow it down because it could make the computer too hot. It could make it more likely to make it less reliable rather than slowing it down.
Okay.
Dust does get in. You know, you've got fans and
got pets, so the...
You get hair? Yeah. In fact, my first book, we wanted to call it How Do I Get the Dog Hair Out of the Disk Drive?
Right.
Because that is a big issue. The computers are often on the ground if you have smokers or pets or just dust. Yeah, it's going to get in there. It's probably not a bad idea once a year to unplug the computer and get in there carefully and dust it out. But will it slow it down? Probably not. It might make it so that the heat is... You know, it's like a blanket, and so the heat is held in there, and that could cause reliability issues.
Because the old tower, opened it up, and my friend was amazed. over the fan, it was like a quilt.
Exactly.
A solid piece of dust.
Exactly. In fact, you know, it's not just you. Most people, if they opened up their towers, would find that in there. It's like a blanket, and it does overheat the thing. So it is a good idea once a year just to get in there. Now, when you go in there, you got to be careful from a couple of things. Of course, you can knock cables loose, but you can also, with static electricity, you know, sometimes vacuums carry a lot of static. You could fry stuff. So you got to be very careful. There are tools made for getting in there. I don't know if you need those, but a little compressed air.
Dust off the air.
Yeah, dust off works fine.
Like in the holes in the side and like blow it in? Or?
Nah, you need to open it up, because if you blow it in, all you're doing is mixing it up.
Around.
Yeah, you're just moving it around in there. You got to open it up. Dust off will work. Any compressed air will work, but you've got to blow it out of the case.
Okay.
Yeah. And when you do it, pulse it, because otherwise it gets very cold, as you'll notice, and it can be so cold it can actually freeze stuff. Your computers do get slower over time with age, but that's really a software issue. Bit rot, some people call it, where, you know, you added more software, you install stuff, you don't use it, and then things break, it just gets slower and slower and slower. So at the same time as you open up the computer, get the dust out, it's not a bad idea to rebuild the software. Just get all your install disks, get a Windows install, all the programs, back up your data. Be good anyway, because you'll have a nice backup of all your data, and then format the hard drive and reinstall everything. Don't install stuff you don't use. This is an opportunity to take stuff off your system. I think everybody needs to do this. It's kind of a pain, and I know it seems like it's no fun. It's potentially risky if you're not careful about backing everything up, but I do it all the time. In fact, I'm due to do it on a couple of my systems. So you can just tell. They just slow down. Ryan, Newport Beach, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Ryan.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Great. Welcome.
I fear that my call is not going to be as interesting as the young lady looking for the notebook. Play World of Warcraft.
There are few who would be quite that interesting, I have to say.
I am looking for a notebook, however, but for business applications primarily.
Okay. Well, you have a lot of choices. That's the good news. Almost any notebook I could think of would be fine for business applications.
I have kind of a unique problem. I don't know that it's unique, but it's something that's of a specific concern to me, which is, for some reason, the last three notebooks I've had over the last, I don't know, 5-6 years, the thing that's ultimately led to their demise was not, data corruption or anything like that, but was, you know, I carry them around in my briefcase and whatnot, and I end up with, hardware failure.
Oh, yeah.
Or like, the ribbon cable breaks.
Right.
Or
notebooks take a lot of abuse. That's the nature of their life. I have a friend.
Are there some
more robust? Yes, there are. I have a friend who buys his notebooks in pairs. He's a writer. Cory Doctorow is the name, science fiction writer. And he buys them in pairs because if one dies, he keeps them in sync. He can immediately continue working and buy another one. So, I mean, notebooks are notoriously bad for falling apart. Now, Panasonic makes a notebook called the Toughbook that is specifically to address this. It is tough. I mean, they plan it almost for work sites. They're more expensive as a result. But they, you know, you can bang them around. They've got tough cases. They've got shock-mounted drives. They're just made to be banged on. In fact, some of them are waterproof. But the main thing you want is one that's just going to handle the G forces of throwing it. You know, you're not even throwing it around, but putting it in a briefcase, moving it around. That's going to bang it around. They come with magnesium alloy cases, shock mounted hard drives. They tend to be more resistant.
Would you say, in terms of just, you know, notebooks in general, that Dell's a good source?
Yeah, I like Dell. I like Dell. They don't make a book specifically for, you know, industrial environments as Panasonic does. But I think Dell's probably my, my first choice in notebooks would probably, there are a number of very good brands. I like Fujitsu a lot. But I think Dell is right up there in the top three, yeah.
And if I wanted to run Microsoft Office, a Mozilla Firefox or, you know, Internet Explorer and do like, and, you know, watch DVDs occasionally, something like that.
Anything will do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there's nothing in particular that I want to emphasize.
No. That you know, you're actually not very demanding.
Yeah, I didn't get that impression. It's just that the last several I've had have been purchased for me by the companies I worked for. Now,
what brands have you had that have not been so reliable?
Well, I mean, they've been okay. You know, I had two gateways.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of gateways.
Yeah, both of them had almost the same problem, which is the screens failed, and it was ribbon cables,
yep.
And I replaced them.
That's just the hinge.
Twice.
That's the lid. You're moving the hinge back and forth, but they really right. should make them, because that's what's going to happen, so they should make them a little more robust. I think IBM, now Lenovo, I think they're very solid notebooks with good solid cases, great keyboards. They tend to be reliable. Dells, I think, are very good. Fujitsu's kind of a lesser known, but I think good brand.
And being somewhat impatient, I'm really interested in, you know, high speed, and it's not hard to come by.
No, in fact, any notebook you're going to get now will probably have a Core Duo in it, which is a dual processor, very fast, very low power, very reliable. If you can wait a little bit, the Core 2s will be coming out soon for notebooks. Those will be even faster, but you don't really need it. A Core Duo is pretty fast. Really, what slows the notebooks down more than anything is the hard drive speed. So make sure you get one with a 5400 RPM hard drive.
Okay, and I use I'm on Singular's wireless network.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Well, a number of companies, including Lenovo, make the notebooks have the Singular WAN and built in.
And if not, I just need to make sure it has a PCMCIA slot.
You get the card. If you get it from Dell, you'll get the card. But Lenovo would be that would be a good compelling reason to go with Lenovo. They support the Singular wireless.
Okay.
Then you don't have anything sticking out the side.
Right, right. And that helps if you're trying to transport it, I assume.
In business, I have to say Lenovo used to be the IBM ThinkPads, but the ThinkPads are just, and I think Lenovo's pretty much kept the quality up from everything I've heard. They're just really good, robust, reliable, a nice feature set. People like them.
Well, Leo, thank you.
My pleasure. I didn't say that I prefer, I should have said, I prefer Macs, of course, as you know. And I think the Mac notebooks are a good choice. But if you're going Windows, if you're in business, you're probably going to go Windows. And I think Lenovo is a very, very good choice. 1-800-520-1KFI. 1-800-520-1534. That's my phone number. Show notes are online at KFIAM640.com. Click the link that says shows there, and that'll bring up the menu of all the hosts. And I'm Leo Laporte. You click that. And then official website on my page on KFIAM640.com. Or just go directly to leo.am. And Shuby's keeping them up to date. All the information, there's a comment box there. If you have an opinion, if you've got a notebook, a tough notebook, one that's been resilient and robust for you, and you bang it around and you'd like to share with Rick, do that. Put that in the comments there. We'd appreciate it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 117.
Listen to KFI live online 24/7. KFI, AM640.com.
.124 on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Till 2 o'clock, then the Dr. Dean show, then a fresh John and Ken at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Let's head back to the phones and Ryan's gone. How about Dean in Anaheim? Hello, Dean. Welcome to KFI.
Hey, how are you? I've got a quick question for you. I've just purchased a Verizon XV6700 PDA phone from eBay.
Mm-hmm.
Got the phone. It's an okay kind of phone, but the navigation button on the bottom broke during shipment.
Oh, nuts.
So because they didn't buy it at Verizon, they won't take care of it.
No, they don't have any responsibility for it.
So the question is, where can I go? Do you have any place to recommend where I could ship this phone to somebody if they could repair it? Do you have any ideas what I could do?
That's a good question. You know, it's made by HTC.
Right,
which is a European or an Asian company. I can't remember. They're not from around here.
No, they're not.
And you'd have to find somebody who did kind of independent repair for the HTC phones. The good news is that phone is not just Verizon. Sprint also sells it. Singular,
the same model,
roughly the same model. Yeah, the 6700 is. It's called the PPC 6700 when it's Sprint, but it's the same. It's the same. Yeah, it's the HTC. Apache is the name of that device that you've got. So what, you have the one with the slide-out keyboard, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's a great PDA,
okay
phone. I'm actually, believe it or not, actually disappointed with it.
Really?
Because I'm a road warrior. I'm on the road every day. I use my phone a lot. And I'm used to grabbing my phone, feeling that bump on the number 5 and dialing.
I agree with you. I have a little trouble with that myself. Yep. Yep.
So I just want to, believe it or not, get this phone repaired and put it back on eBay. And sell it again.
So, well, you can always sell it as is. You can always say, you know, that the thing is broken.
Yeah, well, if I could spend $50 to fix it, then right. I'd make more money. So,
well, HTC, the company that makes these is called UT Starcom. UT Starcom.
Well, that's, yeah, okay, that is manufactured, because the battery says UT Starcom on there.
So what you want to do is find, you know, somebody that does UT Starcom repair.
Okay.
And it's a part that they have to get from UT Starcom, so it's going to really need to be somebody who actually specializes in that kind of repair.
But you don't recommend anybody yourself?
I don't know of anybody who does it. I mean, that's exactly the problem. And in fact, usually people don't even repair cell phones. They're considered kind of disposable. That's a pretty expensive phone to throw out. But, you know, honestly, that most of the time, a cell phone breaks, what do? You bring it back. Do they fix it? Heck no. They have to go, let's just chuck this. And what would you like next? Jim, Mission Viejo, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Quick question for you on the printer, scanner, copier, fax machine. What do you consider good for home use, minimal use, but we do need those particular features?
And you don't want a laser, probably. You want a color inkjet.
Yeah, probably an inkjet, because we're not going to be using that much.
I like the Canon PIXMA. But PIXMA, P-I-X-M-A, they have an all-in-one. Okay. The couple of things to watch out for. One is many of the lower-priced ones don't have a built-in fax. They use your computer's fax modem.
Okay.
So if the fax is important to you and you don't have a computer fax modem, which many people don't anymore, you're going to want to look for it. It'll cost a little more, but a model with it, a built-in fax capability. You know what I would suggest, and I always tell people to do this, the best thing to do is go to PC Magazine and look at their reviews of the all-in-ones, because they tell you exactly what features, and their reviewer is very reliable. I'm David Stone, I know him, and his stuff is good. So if he says it's a good, they like the Brother, they like the Canon. In fact, I just bought an all-in-one, but I got a higher-end one for my business, the Epson. But I like the Canon PIXMAs. I have a Canon PIXMA printer only. It does very good color inkjet printing, excellent photo printing. I know Canon makes great imaging ish stuff. Their fax, their copy machines are good. So I'm not copy machines, the scanners are good. So you'll get a good scanner, good printer, and then what you want to do is see how well the fax capability works. That's one where you often give up something. PCMag.com, and they have the reason is I can't review all the printers out there, or certainly not all the all-in-one printers. I can tell you what I've used and what I like and what I bought, but that's not anywhere near the range of them. You need somebody like a magazine with a lab and a lot of time to test, and a lot of money to test all of these. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. 129, Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center.
Captain Dale Dye, tomorrow evening, 5 to 7 p.m., KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
Bow, bow. Bow, bow, bow. 137 on KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, 1-800-5201-KFI is the phone number. I'd love to hear from you if you've got a question or a comment or a suggestion, or you're a World of Warcraft player or whatever. Let's see. We got Lyle on the line from San Diego. Hello, Lyle. Welcome to KFI.
Hey, I need some help with my iPhoto.
Okay.
I got a Mac a couple months ago because you said to.
And, do you do everything I said? If I said to jump off the bridge, would you jump off the bridge?
Well, I also have the digital camera you just advertised a minute
ago.
The
D70? So. That's the one I have. I love it.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
So I'm playing with those photos on iPhoto, and it looks cool, all the stuff I can add to it. If I send it to the Mac thing and order iPhoto, I guess I ordered a book through them. That comes out cool. But when I take the pictures and burn them to a CD,
yes,
and then I go to the photo store and want to put it on the little computer and quickly just say print all,
right?
It doesn't, because it does me a favor, which actually makes it hard for me, since it saves the modified version and
right.
also the original.
Right, and it's confusing the machine.
That.
Yeah, it's confusing the machine.
Yeah.
So which do you want to print?
That?
Yeah, there is. Which do you want to print, the original or the modified?
I want to print the modified.
Okay. So you have to... The problem is the machine doesn't know from iPhoto, right? And iPhoto uses its own directory structure, which is controversial, by the way. There are programs, pros use programs that use the existing directory structure. iPhoto is designed for consumers who don't know anything about or care anything about directory structures, right?
And that's pretty much me.
Right. But this machine, this machine, you want to be able to use the machine. So when you burn an iPhoto disk, when you burn a disk from iPhoto, it's copying its own directory structure over. That's, by the way, so that if you bring it to another machine with iPhoto, you can import from that disk and duplicate your structure. It's basically a backup of everything. So what you want to do is you want to actually go into the iPhoto directories and not copy everything. You kind of want to do this by hand, I hate to say. If you go to your pictures folder and your iPhoto library, you will see a couple of folders in there that are what you want. There's one folder called Original Photos that is your unmodified folders.
Right.
Photos. Now, that's good to know about, by the way, because when I back up, that's what I back up. I want the original as it came off the camera. That way I know I have a backup of the best quality, right? Not a modified
one. Yeah, I think I've set mine so it backs up both.
Yeah, I mean, if you have the space, back up everything. Yeah. Sure, okay. Why not? But that's you know, that's something new, by the way. They only started doing, I think, with iPhoto 5. And finally, you had easy access to your originals. Now, once you dig into the structure, you'll see that there are other folders basically by date.
Yeah.
Inside there is both the thumbnails, you don't want to get those, and the modified. In fact, I think...
Yeah, I've been getting the thumbnails. I'll open it. It's got thumbnails, which I actually...
You don't want those because they're low res. They look horrible.
Yeah.
So what you want is the photos that are in the modified... I think it says modified originals. I'm trying to remember. I'm doing this by memory.
I know what you're talking about. I've seen that before.
Yeah, that's the ones you want.
Okay.
And just those. And what I would... You have to do this by hand. You have to dig through there, pick the ones you want, and drag them over. And another way to do it that isn't as fast but might be easier for you is to use the iPhoto export command and burn your DVD that way. So create a folder on your desktop.
Uh-huh.
You're going through iPhoto. You can command click the photos that you want. So you can have multiple photos selected.
Yeah, like I'll have everything in a folder, a wedding I shot.
Or do that. That's fine. Yeah, put it in a folder.
But
select everything.
iPhoto.
Right, within iPhoto. Select everything in that folder, and then use the export command. And you want to export as original size. That will not export the original, though. It's a little confusing because it says original, but it's original size only. It'll export your modified original size photo.
Okay.
And that's what you want to print.
And I export that to a folder on my...
Yeah, you can actually, if you want to burn directly, another way to do this is to, when you put in, you'll notice this, when you put in a blank CD into a Mac, it'll say, well, what do you want to do with this? And you say, I'm going to burn this CD.
Uh-huh.
It'll create a burn folder, which you can then copy stuff into.
Okay.
And then you press burn, and it just burns the contents of that folder. So that's maybe even a faster way to do it.
So that'll get rid of the multi...
It'll only have what you want, which is the modified full-size originals. So use the export. You can either do it by hand or use the export command. Probably export's easier because then you'll be in iPhoto looking at the photos you want.
Cool.
So are you kind of a semi-pro?
I'm nearly 40 and just bought a computer for the first time in February.
That's great. Congratulations.
I've done a lot of photography with film and stuff.
Okay. You're kind of a pro photographer, but you're now moving into the digital
realm. But yeah, I'm playing with it a lot.
Right.
I know I probably need to get Photoshop and all that, but iPhoto does so much cool stuff.
I think it's good enough to start with. You don't want to overwhelm yourself. Eventually, you're going to want to look at Photoshop and Adobe's Lightroom.
Okay.
And they don't have this problem. Because they're designed for pros, right? You know, iPhoto is designed for consumers, and they figure out we're not going to bother consumers with this notion of an original and a modified and all that stuff. You can get Lightroom for free right now because it's in beta, so you might want to actually look at Lightroom.
Okay.
It is designed for pros, and it's when Adobe puts it out, it'll cost you money, but the beta version is right now free for Windows or Mac.
So you can play with it.
And you can play with it. And you'll see immediately how it's now, this is a pro thing compared. It's very similar to iPhoto in the sense that, you know, you've got a light table, you can look at your pictures, you can make some simple modifications. But it doesn't have, you know, you're not going to be faced with those issues of confusing people and so forth.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like what you told me.
That will work fine. And the photo booth... the photo machine is just looking at what's on the disk.
Yeah.
And it takes the first thing it finds.
Yeah.
It's not smart. It doesn't go, oh, this is an iPhoto directory. I know where to look. It doesn't know that.
And then it also confuses people when I give them a disk of copies of their stuff when they're opening on their PC. They never know.
If they were on a Mac and they did it, they could just import it directly into iPhoto and it would all be as you'd expect. It'd look just like your setup, but they're not on Macs. So it's a good idea just to get, you know, export the modified originals as you want them onto a disk. Then it's just a flat directory. There's no directories at all. It's just there's a bunch of photos on that disk. And everything can understand that.
I'm going to go try it.
All right, Lyle. Have a good one. Take care. Dave in Chatsworth, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm great, Dave. Welcome.
Well, I have a question. I'm following up on that other person who called and asked about archiving photos.
Yes.
I have about 2,500 pictures.
Oh, boy. Prints or slides?
What's that?
Prints or slides?
They're all print.
Oh, hallelujah.
Yeah, well, hallelujah, but I'm not exactly sure how to do it. Well, I've got an Epson 4200 scanner.
Okay.
And the question I have is, what DPI should I use?
This is a very important question because, of course, you want to save as much resolution as you can, but you don't want 800 megabyte files on your hard drive.
Right. The way I'm looking at it is, you know, drive space is cheap. You know, a 500 gig drive is, you know, $200-$300. So I don't mind spending the money. You know, they're family photos. They go back to the 20s and 30s, and I'm going to be distributing them to the family. And once I get them, I can then, I guess, resize them and give them to people on discs. But I'm not sure if I should go. I don't know what overkill is. I don't know if I should be doing them at 1,200 DPI.
1,200 is overkill. I'll tell you right now.
Okay.
Of course, the higher the dots, DPI stands for dots per inch.
Right.
The higher the dots per inch, the more of the picture you're saving.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger the file size. The real question is, how much is too much?
Right.
I think 300 DPI is fine. But if you're really willing to, part of the problem is your color print, how much resolution does it have anyway?
Yeah.
Right? And 300 DPI gets probably 90% of it. If you really, really have a good quality print,
mm-hmm.
and you really want to make sure you get everything great, 400 is okay. You could even go to 600. See, but those files, it's going to be double the size, right?
Right. Right. Now, someone also suggested, I was reading on a message board, they suggested using a DSLR with a macro lens. Because they were saying that got them through the whole procedure faster.
They're taking pictures of their pictures?
Yeah.
Well, here's the issue with that. Lighting and the angle of incidence.
Oh.
So if you don't get, the thing about a scanner is it's directly flat on, right? So you don't have any parallax distortion. But if you are doing it with a tripod and your camera's even slightly off true.
Right. Okay.
You're going to get parallax distortion. So
okay, good.
I would say a scanner is a good, you have a great scanner.
Oh, good.
So a good scanner is going to do a great job. Remember that the prints themselves are not infinite resolution.
Right.
So, you know, I'm going to put a link to an article from, you might want to go to scantips.com.
Okay.
There's an article in there on how high a resolution.
Oh.
And I'll just quote from it. It says, scanning color prints can rarely yield more detail when scanned at more than 300 DPI.
Oh, okay.
Now, that's color prints. A black and white is higher resolution, can be higher resolution if you use a very fine-grained black and white film and so forth, so on.
Okay.
So, if you're scanning a really high-quality negative,
mm-hmm.
or you're scanning a slide or a very high-quality black and white print, maybe you want to go to 600 DPI. I think 400 is probably right about where the print is.
Okay.
And cool. I usually scan at 300.
Now, let me ask you another one, if you don't mind. What program should I be using for something like this? Because I know Photoshop.
Doesn't matter.
But I don't want to. Is there something better for like this many photos, albums, and things like that?
The
organizational properties.
I see. Not in terms of quality of scanning, because the truth is the scan quality is determined by the driver.
Right.
And so even if you're using Photoshop, you're actually using the driver, the Epson driver.
Right.
Although there are third-party drivers that might give you a better result. In fact, I'll put a link in the show notes. There's a company that, I'm trying to remember the name off the top of my head, but it's a somewhat better driver, frankly.
Oh, okay.
However, in terms of organization, Right. You're using Album? What are you using?
Well, right now I'm not using anything. I just use Photoshop, bring them in, and I keep them.
You might want to look at Lightroom. It's free. I mean, it won't be free forever, but it's free right now from Adobe. That's what we were talking about last caller.
Right. I heard about that. Okay.
Pros use a variety of different packages. A lot of them, frankly, just use the Bridge program that comes with Adobe Photoshop. It's a pretty good organizational program. So if you have Adobe Photoshop CS or CS2, you've got Bridge, and I think that's probably enough.
Great.
All right.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. 148, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
KFI News, powered by the worldwide resources of Fox News. KFI AM 640.
156 KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Keep the phone calls coming. We're going to keep going. Answer calls through 4 this afternoon, 1-800-520-1KFI, 1-800-520-1534. Tim Pomona, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte.
Leo, I need some help.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I'm a Mac user, and I'm planning to get, I guess, boot camp when it comes out on Leopard. And I'm going to take your advice and get Adaware, Anti-Spyware, and all the programs for the Windows XP that I'm going to put in.
You know, you don't have to worry quite so much. Because the beauty, well, I guess if you're using boot camp, you will. That's why I use Parallels. I have to say Parallels, especially the new version, which is in beta right now, is about 90% of the speed of boot camp. And the beauty of that is if you get spyware or viruses, you just, you know, trash the file, the Windows file, and start over. Make a duplicate after, you know, once you get the install just right, and then just start over. But, yeah, if you're going to run Windows, even if you're going to run it on a Mac, you've got to have the antivirus, the anti-spyware, and all the security stuff.
Well, my question is, since I never used any of that stuff, where do I learn how to use it?
Well, there's not that much to do. I mean, you just turn it on and let it run in the background. We do talk about it in the tips on the website. So if you go to leo.am and click the tips section, there's a lot of information on running Windows safely and so forth. But most of it's pretty straightforward. So you're a Mac guy?
Yep, I'm a Mac user.
Yeah.
Because I see words like inoculate versus remove.
Yeah, that confuses Windows users, too. It's not really clear what any of this is doing. Basically, what happens with an antivirus is it runs in the background. It watches email as it comes in. That's one thing it does. It scans it using its signature database, looking for matching files. And then if it finds one, it'll say, oh, you got a virus. I'm going to quarantine this, which means take that file and put it in a special place. That's in case you want to somehow recover the data that's in the file. Most of the time, you could just trash the quarantine, say, fine, I don't need it. The other thing it will do in the background is watch for virus-like activities. That's called heuristics. And if it sees something, you know, changing the system file, it'll warn you and say, and it'll block it and say, do you want this program doing this? All of that happens kind of automatically. There's not a lot of, in fact, there's nothing you really have to set. Same thing with the spyware. The spyware programs will scan periodically, that is, look on the hard drive for spyware, and they'll watch for spyware-like activity and warn you if it's happening. In both cases, there isn't much configuration necessary. I would say just run them. It's funny because I talk to a lot of Windows users moving to Mac. I don't get a whole lot of calls from Mac users moving to Windows, but I think we're going to get more as people are starting to install Windows. These new Macs handle Windows very well, and you get the best of both worlds. And I guess we're going to have to do a lot of educating on security for Mac users who haven't had to worry about that. Truth is, we're all going to have to start worrying about it, Mac and Windows users, even Linux users, because the bad guys are out there, and they're trying hard to take over our systems. Tell you what, let's adjourn for the day. Dr. Dean is champing at the bit to get in here and talk about your body. And then it's John and Ken with a fresh show at 3. But I'll be back tomorrow, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. to talk high tech with you. And I'm going to keep taking calls till 4. So keep calling 1-800-520-1KFI. Thanks for joining me. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center. Well, that's it for this edition of The Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the internet anytime at KFIAM640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the audio archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.